Welcome to season 3 of the Fit Farming Food Mom podcast. I am Connie Nightingale, a former bodybuilder, certified personal trainer and nutritionist with an extreme passion for functional health and fitness. There is a huge problem these days with the standard health narrative. The current allopathic medicine, fitness theories, and nutrition guidelines are completely missing the mark. Through this podcast, I have been able to get uncensored, unfiltered knowledge out to the masses to help anyone. No matter if you're an average Joe or an elite athlete, I want to provide you with valuable knowledge to help you achieve your health and fitness goals. Remember, the best way to support this podcast is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes and sharing with your friends and family or tagging me in your stories or posts on social media. Let's get this health movement out to others. Thank you so much again for joining me. Now let's get to the show. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode. I am really, really excited that you're joining me for this talk today with Dr. Kristen Lander. She is a chiropractic physician and a certified sports nutritionist. She has worked at the intersection of healthcare, fitness, and sports for 22 years. And in 2015, she founded Fiercely Fueled Nutrition, which is an online nutrition coaching company. And they have coached dozens of athletes who have gone on to win national and world titles, as well as set world records in their strength sports. She is also an athlete herself. We hit it off through Jennifer Thompson, actually, and I was a guest on their podcast, and I absolutely loved a lot of the things that she had to say, and we found out that we had a lot of things in common. So today I invite her on the podcast to talk about all things sports nutrition, how gut health can play a role in your performance, and all of the awesome things. So I'm super excited to have her on the show. Well, friends, before we get going on this episode, though, I just want to take a moment to bring up Steel Body Apparel. You may have heard me talk about them in other podcasts. They are a local company to my area that is trying to get out there, and they have amazing athletic wear. I kind of stumbled across them because they asked me to be a model for one of their photo shoots for some advertising. And when I put on their stuff, I was immediately in love with their camo joggers. Now, I'm not much of a jogger girl. I have a wider backside, and so sometimes they're not real flattering, and these made my backside look amazing. Not only that, but they also had awesome bras that really accentuated my good shoulders and an overall quality product, and it is affordable. Come to find out, the pants are only like $34. You cannot beat that. So pretty pumped about their products. I got to go home with some, and now I am completely sold. So pop on over, check them out at steelbodyapparel.com. And with the code Connie10, you get 10% off. Highly recommend you try out the camo joggers. It will be the best $30 you ever spend. So please check them out. I'm sure you will love them. Well, guys, before I ramble on too much further about all of my favorite things, you know I'm always going to put my 2 cents worth in on that stuff. Here is my episode with Dr. Kristen Lander. All right, Kristen, I'm super excited to have you on the show. We were connected from Jennifer Thompson, and we found that we had a lot of things in common as far as really being interested in nutrition and gut health and all the things. You actually own a performance nutrition company, and so you guys are helping athletes fuel the right way. So we're going to dive down that rabbit hole a little bit today.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having me here. I feel like we really jived on a lot of the, health just topics.
I guess the big thing is here is we see so many crazy things being in the fitness industry. So we'll kind of dive into that today. But before we jump into that, can you tell my audience a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and what got you going in this direction?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Kristen Lander. I am a chiropractic physician. Before I was a chiropractor, I also was a personal trainer and a massage therapist for 10 years. So I've been at kind of the intersection of health, fitness, and then also sports for 20 years. So about 2016, I launched my online nutrition coaching business, which is Fiercely Fueled Nutrition. And we specialize in working primarily with strength athletes on performance nutrition. And that really came about because as a strength athlete myself, so I was competing in Olympic weightlifting. I now compete in powerlifting, but I really felt like there was this hole in the industry where so much of the information that was put out for strength athletes came from the bodybuilding world. And it was leaving out, I think, the health component, which is a really big deal, right? Like we need athletes to be healthy, but it was also so focused on aesthetics and not on performance. So I come at it from a performance standpoint where, yeah, you can still reach your aesthetic goals or your weight class goals or whatever goals you might have, but we're going to come at it with a little different approach so that we make sure that your performance is really high. And then also looking at recovery metrics and making sure the athletes are recovering. So we work on sleep and stress management and all the things that go into helping an athlete recover, not just nutrition, so that they just get exponentially better. They get stronger faster when we start dialing all that stuff in. So it's been really fun to kind of put all of the things that I've done over the last 20, 22 years into one package.
I love it. And you guys have so many amazing things going on. When I initially was introduced to you, I start like stalking your Instagram and I'm like, what's she about? Because it sounds like we could be on the same page about some things. And we certainly were. And that's one thing in the performance standpoint that a lot of people don't understand. They're actually not really pulling in enough food, right? Yeah. And it's crazy because I was explaining this to a client the other day. She just started working out in August. And she was like, I can't put on any muscle. Well, she was only eating 11 or 1200 calories. And I'm like, listen, I was like, that muscle is not going to get bigger. It costs your body extra energy, you know, like, so it's not going to get bigger if you're not feeding it enough in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, if you're just simply not taking in enough calories, then your body is going to use whatever calories that you are giving it for other processes way before it's ever going to build muscle. Like building muscle is like the last thing on the chain, right? Like It's got to have everything else that it needs before it's even going to feel like it can use those calories to build muscle, because it does. It takes a lot of calories to build muscle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, I got a question for you then with this, and I'd love to hear your answer, because a lot of people think they need to gain tons of excess body fat though, when it comes to that particular subject, right? So you've got people, it seems like there's no happy medium. There's A, you're not eating enough, or B, now you think that you need to gain like 20 pounds of fat in order to actually hit your muscle growth and your performance goals. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah. Well, it's just so funny. Like I feel like there's so much extremes, right? Like we're always at the extreme end of the spectrum when it comes to stuff like this. And like, there's this happy middle place where all the magic happens. Like you don't have to go to these crazy extremes. So yeah, I mean, if you are going to be trying to build muscle, you really don't have to do it in a fashion where you put on body fat. And for most people, unless they're ultra, ultra lean, and they're so lean that their hormones are impacting their ability to gain muscle and strength. Like, so for that population of person who is like, we would call them very underweight, right? Then maybe that person does need to put on a little bit of body fat to get their hormones balanced up, but that's like a whole nother issue, right? Like they have more going on than just an inability to a difficulty building muscle. So if you want to build muscle, you can absolutely do it without gaining body fat or very, very minimal body fat. And it all comes down to the speed at which you're trying to gain weight. So when we put someone in a caloric surplus to gain weight, then we're going to look at, okay, how much can we gain without gaining body fat? Because the body fat's not going to help you, right? So just go slower. And then, because then the flip side is, you're doing this crazy bulk, and then at the end of it, they're going to do this cut to get rid of the body fat. And then during that, they may be losing some muscle and they may be losing some strength. So instead, we could go really slow, but also depending upon the training age of an athlete, they maybe can gain a lot of muscle in maintenance calories, right? Like they maybe don't even have to go into a surplus. And so that's a big misnomer, I think, in this industry, is everyone thinks that they have to be in a surplus to gain muscle, and you don't. Now, some people do. If you've been training solidly for 10 years, yeah, you might have reached like the top of what you can get to without being in a surplus. And even still then, we don't have to put on a lot of fat. So yeah, putting on like 25 pounds and having 22 of it be body fat, it's not going to help you in any way, unless that's what you want to do. And if that's what you want to do with your body, cool. Like that's fine. You do what you want. I'm a big advocate of that, but it's probably not going to help you with performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there is this place. So people always give me heck because they're like, how do you eat so much? That's crap. You must have a great metabolism. And I'm like, no, literally years of like reverse dieting and titrating things up and trying to dial things in. Like this didn't just, I just didn't go poof, I work out, so I'm going to eat 3,500, 4,000 calories a day, which is where I'm at right now, which is insane.
That's amazing.
it's not really that amazing though. Once you actually have to start doing it and trying to do it cleanly, not
right
fun.
Because that's a lot of food. Yeah.
It is not fun. And it's funny because we always want what we don't have, right? When we weren't eating enough, we wanted to eat more. When we are eating more, we're like, oh, can I just skip a meal today? This would be great, you know? So, yes. So there is this hard place, but it takes years to make these adaptations. And like you said, unless you've been training for, you know, 10 years, you may not have to go to that place. Right. So there's a lot of major factors. And that's why, like, especially in this world of social media and podcasts and all these things, you cannot compare yourself to somebody else.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, that's the number one thing. And I think everyone wants to do that, right? And not only are they comparing themselves to someone else, they're comparing like the life that they live within to somebody else's highlight reel, which is really scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to dive into it, this subject now. So since I've been in more the powerlifting world, I come from bodybuilding and I have done some endurance sports as well. It's so funny because, well, bodybuilding, you know, we all know those guys. Most of them are pretty darn clean. They're eating chicken and rice and broccoli and, but they still don't think that their GI health matters. Like they don't think that has anything to do with their body composition or their performance. Right. And so now we are finding how much our GI health impacts everything. And here we get into like cyclists are real bad. Cyclists, they pizza and beer it like all the time, 'cause all they care about is calories. Right. And I'm like, dude, no wonder like you bonk out on this or this happens, because your overall systemic like inflammation, all these things are affecting your performance. And there are things that it's not just calories in, calories out. There are other factors in performing optimally.
Totally. And that's so common in especially endurance sports, where they can eat so many calories. They have to eat so many calories and they're like, whatever, I'm just going to eat whatever. This is awesome. And it is awesome. And I definitely believe in incorporating things that you enjoy into your diet. And if that means pizza and beer, cool. But we also have to really think about how the foods that we're eating influence our health on so many different levels. And your gut microbiome is almost like another organ. It influences blood sugar management, heart health, brain health, weight management, and our performance, our sports performance. And so we have to really make sure that we're eating in a way that's building up that microbiome. And like, so pizza is a perfect example, especially if it's like a heavily processed food. You know, processed foods are going to over-reliance on processed foods. They're going to tear down your gut microbiome, and it's going to build up some of the bacteria that you don't want, that's not helpful, and then tear down the bacteria that is helpful. So we definitely, I think a trap that so many athletes fall into is they think about calories, all they're thinking about is calories, and not thinking about all of like the micronutrients and the things that really go into improving their performance beyond just how many calories they're consuming.
Absolutely. And then another thought down that road is,
I feel like when you are especially trying to perform at peak performance as an athlete, no matter what sport it is, right? You are already placing stress on your body, which is hard on your digestion. And then you start introducing all of this other stuff. And I feel like it's just kind of a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely. I say that all the time. Like, we're already placing so many demands on our body just by what we're trying to accomplish in our sport. Like, why are you going to make it worse by eating like crap? You know, like I said, I mean, if you want to eat some cookies here and there, like, go for it. I mean, I think it's important to enjoy. We have to enjoy the foods that we're eating too, but we also have to really think about it from the standpoint of how am I building up my body and making it increasing the longevity. That's the part that no one thinks about. They think about the right now. I need calories right now, or I want to get a squat PR right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. But what are we doing to increase the chances that you can do this thing that's your hobby? Because for most, especially in the strength world, for most people, this is their hobby, right? So do you want to continue doing this for a lifetime, or is this something that you want to only do short term? Because if you're not supporting your body in the way that's going to increase longevity, then you're going to be, we see those athletes all the time. They're in and out, they burst onto the scene, and then they're gone in 2 or 3 years because they weren't taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And nutrition's like one of those pivotal ways that we can take care of ourselves. If we just think about it from the standpoint of health and not calories.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you see this in every sport. Bodybuilding's a real bad one. People go to these crazy extremes, and everybody, like, if you're a person on the outside, you don't know how these things work, right? You're like, wow, they look awesome. They must be so healthy, right? And you're like, you are fit, you're in shape, girl, you got it going on, right? But what they don't realize is it's like that Lamborghini that's been driven with the pedal to the floor for so long that it's all clapped out on the inside, but the outside looks good still.
That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. And I think that, I say this all the time, abs does not equal health. And for a lot of people, and especially women, like, that to get to the point where you have very visible ripped abs, potentially you're bringing yourself to a point where you've got a lot of hormone issues, difficulty building muscle, difficulty sleeping, all sorts of stuff, that people are like, yeah, but they're super ripped. They have to be really healthy. Like, no, that's not actually how it works.
No. And that's a hard thing, right? Especially because, like you said, this is a hobby for many of us. Like, I know bodybuilders, they're willing to compromise their life to look us to get a plastic trophy. And I'm like, that might be why I'm not a real popular bodybuilding coach, but I won't let you go there, you know? And I mean, there should be more coaches standing up for this and being like, well, listen, this is a hobby, you know, let me help you compete well at this, but let's do this the right way. Instead, there are coaches that are like, cool, let's just do all the things that are so horrible for your health and your longevity. I mean, there are so many things far beyond whatever chosen hobby sport you have, even if you take it to the next level as an IFBB pro or a pro strongman or a pro powerlifter or whatever you want to be, right? So there's a lot more to it than that. We want longevity. We don't want to be a burden to our family either. And that's something we don't take into consideration, is like what happens when you have like Alzheimer's or you have some kind of extreme health disorder that your family is now having to take care of you because of all the poor choices you made earlier on in life.
Exactly. And again, it's just this like very short-term view of things, but I have so many athletes that come to me and they say, all right, I've got to make weight for a meet that's in 6 weeks and I have to lose 12 pounds. I'm like, well, we're not going to do that. I feel like I turn away business because I'm not willing to sacrifice someone's health and performance for them just to make weight for a meet, especially if we're talking about a meet at the local level. If we're talking about a national championship or a world championship and we're talking about them getting on the podium, then that's potentially a different conversation. But at that level, especially if it's a world championship, they're not new in this game. And that happens a lot. That's a lot more rare for that to happen at that level, because they also know that that's probably not a good thing to do to themselves, and potentially is going to hurt them on the platform. But yeah, those are difficult conversations. And the hard thing is, on social media, everyone sees like, oh, well, this athlete is cutting weight for this meet, so cutting weight must be the thing to do, right? Where it's like, no, actually, if you're relatively new to the sport, let's not diet at all, unless we're talking about your health here, right? Where you've got some health parameters that are maybe not looking so good that we need to adjust and get you losing weight. And you just happen to also be competing, right? So that's a different subject. So those are like weight loss athletes, and we handle them a little bit differently. But when people are trying to lose massive amounts of weight for a local competition, that's where I'm like, let's talk about this. Let's have a conversation, because if you're new to this sport, you're just hurting your growth by dieting. Let's just get really strong where you are right now. And they're going to get exponentially stronger than they would if they just were dieting down, because whatever, they wanted to arbitrarily fit into a weight class, which I've been there. When I started competing in Olympic weightlifting, the weight class that I would have been in was 75 kilos. In the weight class above, which was considered heavyweight, in the weight class above that was called super heavyweight, which I was like, I'm heavyweight? I don't like that. And so I just the name of that freaked me out. And I was like, I must be fat. And so what did I do for my first meet? I started dieting down, which now I'm like, that was so stupid. But I can empathize with those people that like freak out when they have to declare a weight class, and they're like, but I'm uncomfortable in my skin, and I don't want to declare that I weigh this much. And so that's also, I think, an opportunity to just have that discussion with athletes and say, okay, let's think about like a long-term game plan, and let's think about your health, and what are the reasons that you feel like you want to lose weight? Because what I care most about them doing is being healthy and performing well and exceeding their expectations on the platform, not the number on the scale.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this kind of goes for everything, not even strength athletes or athletes of any kind, general population. I mean, as a general population person, I thought I needed to like look this certain way, right? And yes. I got stuck in this like trap of like doing all these things. And I was so unhealthy. I mean, not just physically, but mentally, right? I had all these things going on. I felt awful all the time. Like, and then I figured it out finally, right? It took me a while, but I figured it out that really what feels really great on you and looks pretty good, we're so much harder on ourselves than we should be, right? But yes. What looks really good on people is health. It's not necessarily that six pack of abs. Like, so it's something we don't think about. And then the other thing is like, you want to look like this certain thing. You see these women, these influencers, all these things, you have this idea of what you should look like. I mean, even before the internet was around, we had movies and we had all the things. Like, I thought I wanted to look like the Baywatch girls that have, yeah, like, they have this is like the pivotal thing I used to think of back when I wanted to look a certain way, right? Was we didn't have social media. I wanted to look like the Baywatch girls and have that little dimple in the side of my butt. I thought that was the coolest thing, right? And so that was like what my life goal was, to be that way, right? And then I realized that dimple on my butt comes from starving to death, right? And who wants to do that? And those chicks up there on the screen, they did the same dang thing. They starved to death to get there. They, you know, and that was when all of a sudden all these things started coming together. And I was like, well, who wants to do that for the rest of their life? Not me.
Seriously. And because that's what you think about is like, it's not just what it takes to get there. It's what it takes to maintain that. And that is difficult. And that's going to come usually with a trade-off to your health. You know, there's going to be some sort of trade-off. And that's that I have spouses come up to me at meets that say, you know, if their spouse was cutting weight for the meet. And I always have the discussion with them, like if it's going to have to be a little bit aggressive and like try to kind of talk them out of it. If they decide to do it anyway, we do it and just try to then we do a lot of work on the back end, right? Like we're going to be doing a lot of reverse dieting, get them feeling really good. But I've had spouses come up to me and be like, I don't ever want my spouse to compete in this weight class ever again because they were a total asshole and they were hangry all the time.
Yes. And I mean, I think a lot of people have this idea of where they want to get, but they don't know what it's like to feel like once you're there.
Yes.
And I mean, once you're there, I mean, it's awful. And then the other thing is you literally, once your body starts to shrink and you start to get more and more this crazy body composition, you just want more. Like it's not, there's never this satisfactory place that you end up landing. And my listeners have probably heard me say this before, but the real eye opener for me was I had was so constantly critiquing the way that I looked and stepping on a scale and doing all these things. Well, once I started to like figure it out and get bigger again, I mean, I thought that a double zero was like the size to be, right? You know, and I actually was cleaning out my closet, getting rid of all my old bodybuilding type clothes and stuff. And I pulled out these shorts that were a double zero. Pictures didn't even do it justice how little these things were. And I was like, oh my God, when I had these on, I thought I looked fat in these. I thought I needed to lose more weight. Like, I mean, what the F is wrong with my head? Like there became this vicious cycle where you, once you start trying to do this unachievable goal, it just sends you down this crazy mental rabbit hole.
Absolutely. And that's so common. I think every woman especially can relate to looking at a picture of them from the past and they look at the picture in the now and go, I looked good. And then going, I remember thinking that I needed to lose 10 pounds back then like that. And that carries over. I think that's just anyone, but it's especially really, really common in fitness and strength sports. And, you know, I used to do bodybuilding style training years and years and years ago. And I definitely fell into that. Like, my shoulders aren't quite like peaked just right. And it was like this destructive kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's what made me fall in love with strength sports, was because like, it doesn't matter what I look like. I'm just going to fuel my body and be strong as hell. This is amazing. But then in strength sports, you kind of fall into a different little pattern where it's you're never strong enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always something. It's even worse. I am the only female on a full powerlifting team of men that are between 240 and 300 pounds.
That's awesome.
It's yeah. Until all them, they bench like 700, you know, 600-700 pounds. And here I am with 275. And I'm like, and to me, I'm like, I get this not good enough mentality because of what I'm surrounded with. And they're all amazing. Like they think I'm awesome. And I'm just like, but I want to bench like 500, like you do. You know? And I'm like, wait, hold on. I'm like, I'm half of what these guys weigh.
Yeah, seriously. So on one hand, I think that's cool because it pushes you, right? Like it's constantly pushing you. And I think that I love to train with people that are better than me because I learn stuff from them and it keeps me humble. But it can definitely be like, you sometimes have to put it into perspective and appreciate what you can do and what you are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like for most people, what I'm doing is crazy, right? And like, but for me, the circle that I'm in, I'm the little fish, which is great. I love to push and do what I can do, but I have to keep being a little realistic about the fact that we're probably never going to bench 500 pounds. I mean, probably not. I mean, what I'm doing right now is plenty heavy. So right. It's kind of funny.
I train in a little local gym and it's not like a strength oriented facility. I mean, it's got everything that I need, but it's a commercial gym, but it's kind of a gritty commercial gym. Mm-hmm. But this guy, I'm in meet prep. So obviously like I'm hitting heavy singles and heavy triples and stuff like that. And so this guy came up to me the other day and he was like, you are the strongest woman I have ever met who doesn't look like a dude. That's literally said. And I was like, you've clearly never been to a powerlifting meet, right? Like, I'm really not that strong, but like, thanks. I was like, you need to go to a powerlifting meet. There's a lot stronger women out there.
Yeah.
It really is dependent upon who you're like, who's in your circle.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is now, what's up with this? Like, people think if you're strong, you're going to look like a dude. And maybe this is a little bit of body dysmorphia thinking here, but I don't feel like I even really look like I work out. I mean, in normal life, if I don't have a pump on at the gym, I'm like, I just like normal. Nobody's going to look at me and be like, oh dude, look at that chick. She definitely works out.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. And you're benching 275. So.
Yeah. I mean, is minor, but you know,
so like, right. I don't know where these ideas come from in people's head. I don't even think I want to know, like, where is this coming from? Like, just, okay, you just think what you want to think, but I'm glad that maybe I'm changing the game for you on what you think a woman who lifts looks like. Right. Mm-hmm. Because also, like, there's a lot of, in my opinion, predatory advertising, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're constantly seeing like apparel companies and supplement companies, like only putting up images of like super ripped, super jacked, super lean. And everyone thinks like, that's what an athlete's going to look like. Mm-hmm.
No. We have a local apparel company here. They're really wonderful people. And they asked me to do a photo shoot for them one time. And I was super lean at that point. And I did it and it was great and, you know, whatever. But recently they asked me to do another one. I was like, well, I said, I look a little different these days. And he was like, no worries at all. This is for everybody. This is not for just the skinny little women. He had a name for it. I can't remember what it was, but he's like, this is not for the skinny people. This is not like, we want our company to be good for everybody. I mean, we have good products and we want to show that. So if you would come and do a shoot with us, we would love that. And I was like, okay, cool. Works for me. I mean, I wasn't worried about how I was going to look. I was more or less worried about the kind of stuff they were. I mean, you see it in all these apparel lines and stuff, the stuff that they put out. And it's all the girls with the like booty pose and all of that stuff. And I was like, I don't know if I fit that classification right now.
Yeah. That's awesome though, that they were just like, no, we don't care. Cause this is for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
We definitely need to see more of that.
So, but back to like the nutrition side of things, cause obviously we could chat for hours about everything under the sun, but how about another thing that we brought up? Alcohol. We've got, yeah. I mean, I think athletes, I mean, for me, I have a list, this priority list. I know how hard alcohol impacts my performance. And so it's on the very bottom of my priority list. But let's talk about this a little, because it's a pretty common thing for athletes to drink and they think nothing of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is some absolute objective measures about how alcohol impacts your recovery. So remember that if we're not recovering well, we're not going to perform well. So that's a really big problem. You can only perform as well as you are recovered. So, drinking alcohol is going to increase your resting heart rate. An increase in resting heart rate is a sign of under recovery. And then it's going to impact your heart rate variability, which is for those that don't know what HRV is, it's literally the distance of time, the time between heartbeats. And we want there to be a lot of variability between our heartbeats. And so like the higher your heart rate variability is, the more balanced your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems are, and generally the healthier you are. So HRV, about 24 hours to 48 hours after you drink alcohol takes a massive hit. And this is something that I record in my athletes is I have these, set data points that we're going to be measuring on them to make sure that they're recovering well, that we're looking at all of these metrics. And I always know when they've had one or two glasses of wine or a couple of beers, because their HRV numbers will go from like looking really good to all of the sudden completely bottoming out, like the worst scores they've ever had. And it'll stay there depending on how much they drank and then what other stressors they have going on in life, because we also have work stress, family stress, you know, all of these different things that are going to impact our recovery. And it's shocking. As soon as I started collecting that data on myself and then on other athletes, I was like, and I'm just really not drinking anymore.
It's crazy. I know for myself, I track my heart rate variability. I have been doing it for about 3 years. Then I got, and I already knew that I took a big hit, and then I got an Aura ring. Yes. Yeah. My heart, I recently, so it's very, very, very rare that I have a drink. And we went out with some friends, I don't know, probably a month ago, and they ordered this bottle of wine. And I was like, oh, I'll just have a glass of wine. I never do it. And I had a glass of wine, and my recovery was completely annihilated for like 3 to 4 days. I could not get out of this like horrible, you know how it is. I don't know if you'd have are familiar with Aura, but it's got the red. It's like, take a minute to slow down, you know, and like it killed my recovery. And it was right in the middle of a really important training phase. And I was like, yep, not doing that again.
It's crazy. It is so impactful. I love bourbon. I don't drink bourbon very often, but I was at an event where they had like every high-end bourbon you could ever think of. And I was like, these are bottles of bourbon that I would never buy. So I was like, I mean, I need to at least sample some, right? Like this is an opportunity. So I sampled, I did not have very much. I sampled like 3 different bourbons, probably equaled a drink. And my HRV was just in that, my recovery scores were in the toilet for 2 days. And I was like, and that was why I don't do this very often. So, but I also think that it's important to like, okay, if this is something that you enjoy, let's find a time for you to enjoy it, right? Like maybe let's not do it if you're in a really hard training cycle under a lot of work stress, but maybe away from those things, let's do it. But when is the time that people want to drink? When they're under a lot of stress. So your recovery is already crappy because you're under so much stress. Our bodies don't know the difference between physical stress and mental stress. It's just all stress. Even good stress, like good things that are happening in your life, like big wins at work or whatever, put stress on your body. And so the people are like, oh man, I had a stressful day. I'm going to unwind with a drink. That's just going to make this whole thing worse. It's just going to like this downward spiral of recovery, which is then really hard to get out of because it also impacts your sleep. So you're not sleeping well, you're not recovering well. It's difficult, but I do think that there's a place for it. If it's something like you were talking about your priority list for you, it's really low on your priority list, but for someone else, going to some events and having some drinks might be higher on their priority list. And I think having these ideas of what's important to us and when they're important to us and how that fits within the framework of our current life is really important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which, by the way, you sound like one of the guys on my powerlifting team. He loves bourbon and he's always like, my secret to benching 700 pounds is I drink bourbon every single night. And I was thinking, dude, if you didn't, I can't only imagine what your PRs would be. Right.
Like, right.
That's how my brain thinks. I'm like, oh my God, eliminate that and get your diet cleaned up. And holy cow, dude, you'd probably be setting more PRs than you ever imagined.
Is it that crazy? Oh my gosh. I have had people tell me strange things like my secret to do this is this, and it'll be something that like is completely the opposite of what they should be doing. And I think that exact same thing. I'm like, or how amazing would you be if you didn't do it that way?
Exactly. It's funny because, I always think of like the placebo effect, right? Like, yes. Like there's so much to the mental portion. So if you're literally telling yourself that bourbon is going to make you PR and that's why you're so strong, well, maybe the mental portion of it overpowers the actual physiological portion. I'm not sure, but it gets my wheels spinning every time. Cause I'm always like, but if.
I read a study one time. I'm going to have to look for this now that I'm talking about it, but there was a study about performance enhancing drugs and what happened to people that thought they were on performance enhancing drugs, but weren't. Stronger than the control group.
So, oh my gosh, you and I I was totally just going to talk about that study. And then I was like, oh, well, I mean, I'm probably not relevant to this podcast, but it's funny because it's true. They thought, and then also people couldn't, in that study, I believe people that thought they couldn't get any further without performance enhancing drugs couldn't, because Their body, like they had this thought in their mind that they were at this hard stop in their training. And so their body was at a hard stop in its training because of those thoughts that they were exuding. So that is so funny that you brought that up, because that is exactly what I was thinking.
It's crazy. So there have been times where I'm like, yeah, I'm on performance enhancing drugs when I'm on PR.
Yeah.
Like literally just, it's so crazy what our minds can stop us from. Like our limitations only exist in our minds. Mm-hmm.
So absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
and it's funny because I had Andy Triana on my podcast, which he's an incredible, the guy's brain is just, I wish I had his brain. Is there a placebo for that? That's what I want to know. And he actually talks about some of that kind of stuff too, because his specialty is how we think and how it affects our performance. And so anyway, that's funny that you brought that up.
Yes. But going back, circling that back to nutrition, one thing that I think is vital in nutrition is like finding a way to make nutrition possible and fit into the framework of your life. So people think that it has to be these extremes, right? Like we were talking about, and man, you could just make like a couple of small changes, like eat a little bit more protein or eat, like plan your carbohydrates around your training sessions so that you're getting carbohydrates before for fuel and that you're getting them after to fuel your recovery. And like simple things that people can be doing to have a huge impact on their performance and their health, but they're in this all or nothing mindset with it. And they feel like they can only do it for a short period of time. And that is, I think, a limiting belief, right? Is that it has to be this extreme, completely change everything that I'm doing, as opposed to, what's like the low hanging fruit? What are the smallest things that I could do to make the biggest impact that's not going to completely change my entire life, and then go from there? And that's one of my favorite things to do with athletes or anyone that I work with on nutrition, is like really assess their life in their nutrition. And I know, because I've been doing this for long enough, the places where I can say, oh, that's going to be the big one. That's going to be the big thing that you barely have to change. We could change it just a little bit and it's going to pay dividends.
So, you know, touching on that then, what is your favorite big factor that a lot of people are overlooking when it comes to optimizing your performance or your nutrition in some way or another?
Their pre and post training meals. So we always see this is very common on social media. We'll see these nutrition hierarchies. And people always ask me what I think of them. I'm like, they're good. They're a good starting point, but they always put nutrient timing like up towards the top, that's less important. And I'm like, well, hold up though, because the pre and post training meals represent an opportunity to get in the amount of calories that you need to get in first and foremost. So like, that's helpful. It also provides a framework for how to arrange your day. And so whenever someone tells me that they're not really eating before they go to the gym, I'm like, well, we're going to change that. And I'll get them somewhere within the 1 to 4 hour window, depending upon their digestion, their schedule, all of that, get them getting like a third of their carbohydrates for the day in that meal. And then another third immediately post-training, massive changes in their nutrition and recovery. In fact, there are several powerlifters that I work with that are very elite and have been training for a very long time and are very well known. And I won't say their names because I didn't ask them if I could, but there's one in particular. I just got him really honing in on his post-training carbohydrate consumption, because he was, I measure soreness and fatigue and all these things. And I was like, I just don't feel like you should be this sore all the time. I think that we can change this, because the soreness at sometimes was impacting his next training cycle or his next training session. And so I was like, would you please just try this for me? And I'm going to give you the science behind it. So I did, he did it. And within a week, he noticed a huge difference. And now it's been like 2 or 3 weeks. And he's like, this is incredible. And I can't believe I've been lifting this long and didn't know how impactful this one simple thing was. I didn't change the amount of carbohydrates he's eating in a day. We just moved them. Mm-hmm. And it was massive for his recovery. So that is those two things for people that are already relatively eating about the right amount of calories and maybe the right spread of their macronutrients, just simply changing those things. Massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. Well, if everybody wants to come and find you and what you're up to, how do they do that?
So you can find me on Instagram. That's where I hang out the most of anywhere. So my personal Instagram is Dr. Kristen Lander. My business Instagram is at Fiercely Fueled Nutrition. I also have a podcast called The Strength Academy that Connie was on. Mm-hmm. So you can find us on any of your favorite podcast players.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I think we had a lot of pearls in today's conversation. So wonderful, wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun, Connie.
Well, thanks for tuning in. For further information about me and my programs, as well as free recipes and other health tips, please visit www.ConnieNightingale.com or find me on Instagram at ConnieBegani. I want to remind you that any opinions or views expressed in this podcast are their own and that they are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness or condition. This show is not intended to replace your regular health care. Please consult with your current primary care provider before changing any of your diet, exercise, or medical protocols. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time.